So thank you, team, and thank you to all the rest of the team who you perhaps haven't seen, but we've had quite a big crew here over the last few days. This is the first retreat after the winter recess, so we've had, as well as Rebecca and Margie, we've had Dan and Don and Mick, all busy beavers working to get the center clean and tidy and repaired and ready for this retreat. And even though, as Margie said, I used to be manager here back in the early 2000s for about 3 years, I'm still always amazed at just how much work it takes to get this, a retreat like this, actually launched. And on the other side too, when I've been a meditator, I'm always amazed at how much effort it takes to extricate from one's life to be able to come and move into a more simple and contemplative life as we do on retreat. So I really wanted to start by saying congratulations. Congratulations on having made it here. Congratulations on having got all the practicalities taken care of so you could come here. For taking care of the outer circumstances, but also congratulations for having taken care of the inner circumstances. Because I know from my own experience and also from working with a lot of students that quite often as a retreat approaches, we can be beset by waves of perhaps anxiety, doubt, self-doubt, perhaps even fear at the idea of moving into this new and unfamiliar territory. Because even if this isn't your first ever retreat, even if you've done lots of retreats before, you'll still know that every retreat is different. Every retreat is unique. And we never know quite what we're going to encounter. So I wanted to take a moment of silence just to appreciate that you made it, that we are here, to really consciously let that in. Metaphorically or literally, just to breathe out. And appreciate that here we are. Here in this room. Here at the start of this retreat. And I wanted to highlight the fact that we've arrived because ordinary mainstream society, the dominant culture that most of us live in, from my perspective, is not very good at acknowledging transitions. We tend to treat ourselves like machines, or these days more like computers, thinking that we somehow should be able to just plug, unplug, flick a switch, swipe right, swipe left, next, next, next. And we forget that we're human beings with organic flesh and bone bodies and nervous systems that need time to orient to change. So although your physical bodies might be sitting here right now in this room, I'm guessing that at least at times your hearts and minds might be elsewhere. In fact, some of you might not be hearing a word that I'm saying right now. And some of you might be half listening and half thinking about that work project that you didn't quite finish, or whether you really did lock the back door when you left, or whether you remember to tell your partner that crucial thing that he needs to do or she needs to do while you're away. And I'm saying all this just to emphasize how normal it is, how natural. And yet, how many people believe that they should be able to just switch off everything they were doing earlier and immediately settle into being here. And then if that doesn't happen, it's easy to get caught in self-judgment and try to force ourselves to get with the program, as they say. But that struggle only makes it even worse. And it makes us even more tired than we already are. So it's very common on the first few days of the retreat to find ourselves battling with stress and exhaustion and frustration and self-judgment and so on. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Very common experience in the first day, two, three of a retreat. So as I was reflecting on all this, I thought for this retreat, I'd like to try entering into it in a slightly different way to see if we can avoid that very common syndrome of struggle. And what I'd like to do is to take tonight and tomorrow to really let ourselves ease in, to let ourselves ease into the usual retreat structure, to take our time and to let ourselves fully arrive here a little more organically, so that we can make a more humane and conscious transition from our everyday lives to being here, to slowing down, to simplicity, to silence, so that tomorrow we're going to have a full day of easing into this retreat mode before we start the usual formal structure of alternating sitting and walking and full noble silence. So I'll say more about the details of what that will involve tomorrow morning at the 8:30 a.m. instruction sitting. Tonight, what I'd like to do is start our retreat in the same way that the Buddha always started his teaching whenever he was meeting with a new group of people. He always started by orienting to the heart quality of generosity. So according to the discourses, the Buddha was, whenever he was invited to teach people he didn't know, rather than immediately starting with meditation instructions, he began by talking to them about the value of generosity. And one reason he did this is because generosity is pretty much a universally valued quality. Most people can agree, at least in principle, that being generous is a good thing. So once the Buddha felt that his students had accepted and understood the value of generosity, he went on to talk about ethical conduct, the commitment to non-harming, which he also presented as a form of generosity, giving ourselves and each other the gift of not harming. And in keeping with this tradition, tomorrow night we will be making the formal commitment to non-harming. As many of you know, at the start of a retreat, we usually recite the 5 ethical training precepts together, which we'll do tomorrow night. So for now, I just invite you internally to make that commitment grounded in a general orientation towards non-harming, but committing to not killing living beings, to not taking what hasn't been offered, to not misusing our sexual energy in ways that cause harm, to not telling lies or using harsh speech, and to not take intoxicants that cloud the mind and lead to heedlessness. That's the traditional formulation, and we'll be going into them in more detail tomorrow. But for now, just to mention that last one about intoxicants, that doesn't apply to prescription medication. So if you are taking any kind of prescription, please do continue. So coming back to this theme of generosity then, the Pali word that's usually translated as generosity is dana. And Pali is the ancient Indian language that the Buddha's teachings were transmitted in. So this word dana refers to the act of giving and to the gift itself. Now the gifts could be material goods, they could be money, or they could be non-material. Giving of our time, of our energy, of our presence, even something as simple as a smile can be an act of generosity. In the West, though, unfortunately, this broader understanding of dana has become a little narrow, and it often seems to be equated with making a donation of money. And it's true that the actual word donation in English comes from this Pali word dana, so there's a very direct link there. So most of you are probably familiar with being invited to offer dana in that context, perhaps at the end of a retreat or a teaching. We're invited to make a contribution. And to acknowledge that form of dana is very useful, it's very necessary. I wouldn't be sitting here doing this retreat if I hadn't received that kind of support from previous students. And this whole center wouldn't exist if not for the ongoing financial generosity of many thousands of students over the last 30 years. So material generosity is one aspect of what the Buddha was pointing to here. But what's more important in the Buddha's teaching than the thing that's being given is the quality of the heart and the mind that that giving stems from. And so in the Buddha's teachings, there's another whole word that is used for this aspect of generosity, and that word is chaga, spelled C-A-G-A. And in Pali, C is pronounced ch, so chaga. And chaga refers to the quality, the mental quality of openness, of willingness to share. It's that underlying motivation that leads us to offer some kind of gift. So I think of chaga as the spirit of generosity that allows the gift to happen. And this, I wanted to highlight this quality of chaga because it's a very powerful resource to develop at the start of a retreat. I think of it metaphorically as being like fertilizing the soil so that all of our other good qualities can grow out of that soil. So the Pali word that's usually translated as meditation is bhavana, which literally means cultivation. And that same word bhavana is used in Pali to talk about farmers cultivating or bhavanering their crops. Gardeners bhavanering, that's a bit of a tongue twister, cultivating their flowers, their fruits, their vegetables. And in the same way, what we're doing here in meditation is cultivating the heart mind. So chaga, generosity, is a fertilizing of the soil of our hearts and minds so that our meditation can produce the greatest benefits. So again, chaga is the feeling, the motivation, the desire to share something with someone, to be of benefit to others, but also to ourselves. It's a quality of open-heartedness, one that supports empathy, kindness, compassion, self-compassion, appreciative joy, gratitude, acceptance, balance, steadiness, interest, calm, and so on. So you might get a sense then that chaga, the spirit of generosity, allows all of the other beautiful qualities of heart and mind to flow very naturally. And it sets up a positive feedback loop, one that makes us want to continue with the practice. Because if we're doing it right, in other words, if it's true generosity that's not being done out of duty, but out of genuine willingness, it feels good. So to get a sense of that, I'd like you to take a moment right now just to see if you can remember a time when you experienced generosity, either on the receiving end or the giving end, a time when you were generous to someone else or someone was generous to you. Now, this doesn't have to be a huge thing. It could be as simple as when you walked in the hall this evening, you held the door open for someone, or someone held the door open for you. So just any very simple act of generosity. Not overthinking it, but just see what you can find, what you can bring to mind right now. And as you remember that act of offering or receiving generosity, what does it feel like? What do you notice in the body, in the heart, in the mind when you bring to mind that generosity? How does it feel? I just invite you to call out one word that you notice. What's it feel like? Warm. Two people saying warm. Yeah, beautiful. Safe. Open. Lightness. Uplifted. Light.
Connecting.
Supported and supportive, I guess. Any others?
Joyful.
Yeah, so generally, I mean, I feel every time I heard each of those words, there was a little flicker of, good, nice, pleasant. So generosity generally has this feeling of warmth, connection, openness, expansiveness, empathy, and so on. So you might get a sense of the benefit of consciously cultivating it and strengthening it as a resource for our practice here together. And so I thought to deepen that a little further now, by beginning to cultivate generosity in the form of sharing with each other, just a little bit. Just a little bit of getting to know each other, because we're going to be spending the next 9 days in this retreat. To begin to introduce yourselves and to explore this quality of generosity together in pairs, practicing mindfulness as we speak and as we listen. And this is definitely a practice, a training, because sadly in our society, it's actually not that common for people to be generous with each other as they speak and listen. So most of us need some training in maintaining that base quality of generosity, giving the other person their full attention as we listen, and likewise speaking as an act of sharing, as an act of generosity. So I'd like us to take a moment just to find somebody to meditate together with, somebody just sitting nearby, so maybe just turn to someone close by and see if they'd like to work with you in this brief exploration. And when you have a partner, please sit with them, preferably both on the same level. So if you're both on the floor, both on the floor. If you're both on chairs, there are spare chairs if you need them. So I'm going to guide you through this whole process, step by step. But I'll give you a little bit of an overview first, so you know where it's heading. Do you all have partners? Okay, or would you like to work with me? Oh no, let's do three, that's fine. I'll just have to remember to give you the time to do that. So you're each going to have 3 minutes to speak separately. So rather than this being a back and forth conversation, one person will have 3 minutes to speak while the other person just listens. Then I'll ring a bell. The second speaker will have 3 minutes to speak while the first person just listens. And then if you help me remember, I'll do the same thing again for the group of three. If you're listening, your job is simply to listen. So you'll be offering the speaker the gift of your full attention. You don't need to respond verbally. You don't need to coax or coach or give advice. You just simply settle back and receive what the speaker is sharing. When each person has had a turn, I'm going to invite us to come back to the whole group. And then you're going to introduce your partner to the whole group by name, where they're from, and then one thing that they shared with you about generosity that struck you in some way. So I think it might actually be better if I worked with you, Donna, because then it will be simple. So if I was working with Donna, which I will be, I would take, in my 3-minute time, I'd say my name, where I'm from, and then I just explore a little bit about how generosity has supported my practice, how it supported me to be here on this retreat, anything at all about my experience of this spirit, this heart quality of generosity in my meditation practice in daily life. Then we'd reverse, Donna would share her thing. Then when we come back to the group, Donna would say, I worked with Jill. She's from England and New Zealand, and I was struck by what she told me about how she lives completely off dana, and how in the beginning that was really challenging to be on the receiving end of dana all the time, but now she's more used to it, and she feels like she's also able to offer as equally well as receive. So does that make sense as an overview for people? Are there any questions about that so far? Okay. So, I'd like you to just take a moment now to introduce yourselves to each other. First name. And now the person whose first name is closest to the beginning of the alphabet is going to be the first speaker. So take a moment to work out who that is. And first speaker, please raise your hand just so we're clear. Everyone knows who's speaking first. Beautiful. Thank you. Okay. So when we're ready, first speaker, you're going to have 3 minutes to again just say your name for the benefit of the listener, where you're from, and then just to explore how this quality of chaga, the spirit of generosity, has been a support for your practice, perhaps how it helped you to get here for this retreat, anything at all about your experience of generosity. So first speaker, 3 minutes. Taking a moment of silence just to pause and to breathe. And just to notice how you feel now. So we'll switch now to the second speaker with the same investigation. How has this quality of chaga, the spirit of generosity, supported your practice, perhaps helped you to be there, be here today? How has generosity been part of your practice, part of your daily life? Second speaker. And I'm really struck by how each one of us is almost like the tip of an iceberg or the tip of a tree that has roots of generosity that are going back into our families, our neighborhoods, our workplaces, all of these different people who have helped support us to allow us to be here on this retreat. So there's just already this sense of a flowering of generosity just from the fact that we're here. So thank you for being willing to share that so fully in such a short space of time to bring that quality of the heart forward. So now we've had a little practice of generosity in relation to speaking and listening. I'd like to say a little bit about the noble silence that we're going to be entering into from now. Some of you are new to the retreat experience, so this noble silence involves not only not speaking to each other, but also, as Margie said, not writing notes to each other, generally not reading or writing, keeping eye contact fairly minimal, and generally just giving each other space. It also includes not using devices, no phones, laptops, tablets, and so on. And just to acknowledge that for people who are new to this, noble silence can at first seem a little bit strange, a little bit unnatural, because in mainstream society, silence is often used as a kind of punishment. We ostracize people. And these days, particularly, being asked to put aside our devices is a serious form of deprivation. So putting these two together, it might seem strange to think of noble silence as an aspect of generosity. But if we look at it a little more deeply, we might see that by giving each other the gift of silence, we're allowing each of us to go inward more fully. You could say to befriend ourselves more deeply, because we don't have the pressure of having to perform socially and maintain conventional ways of relating and be someone, be on, play out roles and things. We can put all of that aside and just bring our awareness inwards to befriend ourselves more and more fully, so that when we do come out of the noble silence at the end of the retreat, we're in a better position to be able to befriend others from that place of knowing ourselves better. So this is really the gift of noble silence. And just to offer that as an act of generosity to each other. So not speaking with each other except in the times when you're invited to practice together, mindful speaking and listening. And in the same spirit of easing into the retreat that I mentioned earlier, tomorrow there'll be phases when the silence is optional. But this hall, the meditation hall, and the dormitories will always be in silence. So if you choose to keep practicing, doing formal meditation, you can meditate here in the hall or in your bedroom. But if you would like to talk to others, you can use the dining room. You can have cups of tea there with each other. And then tomorrow evening, as part of the evening Dharma talk, then we'll start the formal period of noble silence. And that's when, as Mari said, you'll be invited to hand in your phones as part of a little ritual. So that's a very general overview of some of what will be happening tomorrow. I'll give you more detailed information at the 8:30 sitting tomorrow. So from now through until 8:30 tomorrow, we all will be in silence together. And then there'll be phases during the rest of tomorrow where we'll be moving in and out of silence. All of it grounded in the spirit of generosity. So you're really invited to feel into yourself and decide what is most beneficial for you. Is it to speak, to share, to connect, or is it to practice more formally in silence? So it will be a kind of a you choose optional set of sessions tomorrow. So that's the overview of what's coming up. For tonight, now that we have started to build this foundation of generosity and open-heartedness and open-mindedness, if that's a word, I'd like to bring the evening to a close with just a short meditation practice. I know many of you have traveled quite a long way. Many of you are probably tired. So I'm not going to go into a lot of meditation instruction right now. I'd like to keep it very simple and just invite us to start steadying our attention, steadying our awareness, steadying our mindfulness on the breath, on the experience of breathing. Because as most of you know, in this particular style of meditation that's practiced here, being insight meditation, we use mindfulness to help us become more aware of what's happening in our bodies, our hearts, our minds, as it's happening. But if I were just to say to you right now at the start of the retreat, okay, just be mindful, just be present, whatever your experience is, just know it moment to moment. Don't get lost. Don't get distracted. See you at the end of the retreat. How do you think that would go? Probably be pretty difficult. So most of us need training. Most of us need support to help steadying our awareness. Especially because most of us these days are living hyper-busy lives with lots of distraction that keeps scattering our attention. So it's not easy to just sit down and start being mindful. So over the next couple of days, we're going to be practicing some meditation techniques that do help to steady our scattered minds, help to soothe our distractedness, and help us to find some stability, some ability to stay present with all of the different experiences that happen as we sit, as we walk, as we go about our lives on retreat. And we're going to start that process tonight by bringing awareness to our bodies and then gently paying attention to the breath in a very relaxed and unforced way. So we'll be using the breath as an anchor or a kind of a home base that we can keep coming back to whenever we realize that the attention has wandered off. And to help us stay present with the breath, I'm going to use a technique we call breath counting, where we just softly, silently count each breath from 1 through 10. And then we continue in sets of 10. In the same way, if any of you play music and you count bars of music, so we would start, we breathe in, we breathe out, we silently note 1. We breathe in, we breathe out, silently note 2, in, out, 3, and so on, all the way up to 10. And then the next set, we count 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, and so on up to 10, and then 2, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, and so on. And the benefit of doing it that way is it's a little bit more complex. So if we're just going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 10, 1, 2, it's very easy to just lose track. But taking a little bit more effort to count in sets of 10 can help us stay a bit more alert. Even so, at some point we'll realize we've got lost. And this is the most crucial instruction. When we recognize that, with a smile, simply begin again. Come back to 1. So one of my teachers, Joseph Goldstein, says the 3 words, simply begin again, are some of the most important words in insight practice. And I like to add with a smile, because often we get frustrated that we've wandered rather than celebrate the fact that we noticed. So really letting yourself notice, oh, I just recognized I'm lost. With a smile, simply begin again, come back to 1. And it's possible you just sit there going 1. 1, 1. I have actually done that on retreat. It's very interesting. It's not a problem. Just that, let that be the practice, that constant simply beginning again with no frustration, judgment, and so on. Okay?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.